Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm on NFL Network. It's always a pleasure. Michael, brought to us by Porsche of Walnut Creek, a Stead automotive dealer. Michael, good to have you here. Damon Bruce, Ray Ratto with you. And man, oh man, the 49ers and Packers in an NFC title game. Outside of Cowboys fans, that sounds pretty good, right?
Well, yeah, it's so interesting how it's the old days again. You remember those battles, the 49ers and the Packers. I remember the T.O. catch and all of that stuff, man, and coming back. And you're right, outside of the Cowboys would have liked for that to have been the old battles between the 49ers and Cowboys, since we've had such great battles in the NFC Championship game. But what a dominating performance, I think. I thought it was by the 49ers in that Vikings game to put them out of their miseries and win that game.
It was a clinic by Kyle, his coaching staff, and his team. I did not expect Kyle Shanahan to put on a clinic against Mike Zimmer. I really didn't. And maybe it was just because he couldn't get Dalvin Cook going. So the Vikings were off schedule all afternoon. 7-3 and outs means you really had no chance.
Yeah, and that's what we always talk about. Listen, going into the game, honestly, eerie, if you want to call it eerie or however you want to place it, there was a similar situation here. I remember talking about with some people, we were talking about, take the running game away from each one of these quarterbacks and which could survive out of Garoppolo and Kirk Cousins. And you took the running game away from Kirk Cousins and you saw what happened with that. But not only when you take the running game away, and that secondary played a very good game also. And I love the press conference with Richard Sherman. Sherm has had some great success in life, but he is one of those guys that no matter how much success he's had, he's carried that chip on his shoulder. And some people, it rubs the wrong way, because I heard people even at a network talking about, why is Sherm up there spitting all that about himself instead of promoting his coach? He should have been promoting his coach. I said, I think he did promote his coach, you know, but why does it bother you that guy is that way about himself? And Jimmy, one thing I always love about Jimmy Johnson, and congratulations to Jimmy and Bill Cowell for getting in the Hall of Fame, that he would always say, everybody do what they do to get to their best spot. Don't worry about trying to do what everybody thinks you should do. Everybody do what you do to get to your best spot. And Sherm likes to have that work, that thing when nobody believes in him, nobody gives him a chance, nobody wants to call him great. That's what he believes to get him to that right spot. Then I don't have a problem with that. I don't know why everybody else gets so crazy about it.
As you're watching the game with your trained eye, at what point did you decide this is over?
Early.
Minnesota's finished. Exactly when you say early?
Well, as soon as I saw that they had the clamps on Dalvin Cook, when I saw that, because I was staying on the show, we were asking, are you a believer in Kirk Cousins? I said, I'm a believer that Kirk Cousins may be a chef in the kitchen, but Cook got to do all the cooking. If Cook is doing the cooking, then Kirk can be a master chef. But if Cook ain't doing the cooking, then Kurt is just somebody you took from Burger King that you got enough cooking. That's what that was. Because it all runs around what they do with Dalvin Cook, man. And Kirk Cousins makes great strides. It was a great game he played against the Saints. We have always put a strike against him in big games and playoff situations. And he made some serious throws in that game against the Saints, especially in overtime. But in this business, you get 7 days and you got to do it again. That's just the reality of it. And 7 days later, he could not do it. And so, yeah, I knew as soon as I saw that they had a pretty good control on the run game, then I knew Minnesota was going to be in trouble.
I want to double back on Richard Sherman for a second. You said that he is a guy who plays best when he's angry and when he thinks people are doubting him. in a year like this, in which he has basically run the table reputationally, everybody agrees that he was one of the two best cornerbacks in the sport. How hard is it for someone to manufacture things to get angry about when nobody seems to be trying to make him angry? I mean, because I'm sure there's a technique to it, because you had to go through it yourself, because you were a great player all the time, and everybody agreed you were a great player. So how tough is it to manufacture people disliking you when everybody thinks you're doing a hell of a job?
Honestly, Ray, man, you'll blow your mind how easy it is for football players to get there. It's just what it is, because it seems like it's where we are. Most of us are at our best. You know, even if you look over the history of most of the kids that make it to the NFL, really, I always work back through their own upbringing. And I tell people, our greatest promise lies somewhere in our greatest pain. And it's somewhere in that your pain, that pain of something pushed them to that great promise that made them work hard to get them in the NFL. And I'm telling you, the year the Eagles won, you know, the Eagles were starting to play teams that they had already beaten before, and they were still wearing that underdog mask, saying, "We're the..." That's like, you already beat these guys. What do you... You can't be underdog to people you already beat, but you want to wear that mask, and you will find a reason. So it takes any one person to say any one thing, and you'll find people up at the podium talking about, yeah, well, you're talking about what people said about them, when everybody doesn't know what people said about them, because maybe only they read that comment. And the rest of the report is like, what are you talking about? I don't remember seeing it. But it was something that you saw, and you made that thing germinate within your spirit until it grew, and then you burst out to make yourself play better. It's the simplest things that guys will grab and start saying, it's me against the world, because that's what they pulled on mostly to get to where they are. So they go back to that source of power.
Yeah, what's the old boxing? It's real hard to do road work when you're sleeping in silk sheets, and you know, you got Richard Sherman, who's going to go to the Hall of Fame, who's won a Super Bowl, been to another, and has come back from a crippling injury, and he is still angry. Again, the chip on the shoulder is an endangered species. And so the athlete who can put it there, whether it's real or imaginary, it's right. A skill.
You just said it right there. And especially now more than ever. Now that athlete lived a lot of them living before. But honestly, we've gotten such a place in this country, man, and there's so much success, and everybody's in a better place that really – I wish the Cowboys had more people with more chips on their shoulders. Mm-hmm. That's the whole issue. I don't know if Mike McCarthy, but that's what he has to find out. How can you tap into that source that makes them go to that place, that makes them bring out everything they have? You know what I like to liken it to? You ever hear about the mom who has the baby, and there's a car accident or something, and the baby's stuck? And she finds strength to raise that car up off that baby, because that's where she goes to that place. Athletes need to have, and most do, they have something that puts them in that kind of place that brings about that kind of strength. And that's all Sherman was talking about. I absolutely love it. I know a lot of people don't, but I believe that's because they've never had that thing that take them to that place.
Michael Irvin here on 95.7 The Game. Since we're talking strength, how strong do you have to be to run 12 consecutive running plays against another professional football team?
Boy, I'm telling you, you just got to be. and understand the kicker to it. Understand the kicker to it. It is more than just, oh, the run's working. It's the run's working offensively, and the run's demoralizing them, their whole team, defensively. It's that whole team. You know, we went in against Buffalo at halftime of Super Bowl in Atlanta, and when we were down, they came out. They were up. They got the ball first. We knew. We said, man, if they score, we're in trouble. We stopped them. We got the ball. We must have run the ball 10 straight times, because we had to reestablish who was the most physical in this game, and you wanted to reestablish it, but at the same time, you demoralized them. And I remember watching them wilt. after you go one, two, three runs, four runs, five runs. Because think about this, and I heard this the other day, and it was so brilliant. It was brilliant. And you know who said it on that quarterback show? Joe Montana. He said it, and he said it's something that Bill Walsh used to always say. It was so great that the next day, because we were all at the hotel watching it Friday, Saturday when we got in meetings, all of us to a man brought up the same point that Joe said on TV, and it was like a boof, blew our minds. He said that Bill Walsh would always tell him, he said, it's funny, if you hand the ball off and you run for 4 yards, the defense starts thinking, oh my God, that's too much. We got to stop him. But if you throw a 4 yard pass on first down, the defense think they won that round,
right.
Won that play. Is that not that's amazing? I was like, that's brilliant. That's brilliant. He is so right because they see the 4 yard run as a loss and it's demoralizing. But they see the 4 yard pass as a win because we sold you, we gave you up the short pass. That's a win. Dude, listen, I learned a lot of football in my life. I've never heard anybody break it down like that. I could not even sleep when I heard it. I went back in the meeting the next day and said, dude, that was brilliant. And that's exactly what you see when you go 12 straight runs. You see a demoralizing team. You demoralize that defense, and that's what they did.
Based on that, how difficult will it be for Kansas City's defense to cope with Derrick Henry, or do they just at this point just condition themselves to the notion that they can run the ball 100 times, we have Mahomes?
Well, here, this is, as I'm the defense of the Kansas City Chiefs, you got to run. The only way you don't you go in here because you already dropped 188 on you, 184. So you can't go in here thinking, we're going to stop this. We're going to stop this. If I'm the defense, I'm taking all the offensive linemen out. I'm taking the receivers, get them some grub, make sure Mahomes is good, because the only help you get is not on your unit. It's on the other unit. You got to tell them they need to score early and try to score often, and let's make them get out of this run game. Do to Tennessee what Tennessee did to Baltimore, because you won't be able to stop him running. That you will not stop that motor. That's what I call him, that motor. You see that commercial when that dude sitting up there, he's putting gas in the gas tank, and he's a man, half motorcycle. He's a motor. And he said, what do you got in gas? Putting in gas. What do you got in the big coke? I'm drinking gas. That's what Derrick Henry is. He's a motor coming downhill, man. I mean, it's incredible watching this big dude run. He turned Earl Thomas into a blocker for him. You know, when Earl came at him, he stuffed on him so much. Earl turned all the way around, looked like he was blocking for the man. And I almost thought, Earl got to go explain that to his son. You know, Dad, how could you let him do you like that? You know what I mean? It's that kind of thing. They cannot expect to do it defensively, especially the Chiefs defense, who's given up a lot of running yards. They have to try to do that offensively by putting up big plays. And getting them out of their run game.
Who is physically, Michael, the biggest running back you ever saw? I'd feel like Derrick Henry's got to be in the conversation. He's Christian Okoye big. He is Eddie George big.
Yeah, but with a little bit of with more speed though.
Oh yeah. Oh, but with 4.4 flat burner speed.
Right, with one flat burner speed, because you see him breaking out, and that's what's amazing. Because you usually think, okay, let's get him slowing down and let other people get on him. But once he gets rolling downhill, he's a tough out. And I don't know that I saw a guy that runs like that at 260. You know, I played with Herschel Walker. Herschel Walker's a big dude, but not like that. Not like that. I mean, Christian Okoye was a big dude, but he didn't run like that.
No.
You know, nowhere near like that, man. And I mean, it's one thing to be big and strong, but you got to always remember the equation for strength and speed. Speed is strength times two. Speed is power times two. So to have that kind of strength, that kind of power, and then put speed on it doubles the strength and power, and now you got a problem. And that's exactly what Derrick Henry is.
If you're Nathaniel Hackett, the offensive coordinator for the Packers, is there anything you can do schematically to disadvantage the 49ers, or do you simply have to look at Aaron Rodgers and go, be you?
Well, you're going to let Aaron Rodgers be him anyway because that's your best opportunity. But I tell you what I would start looking at to try to minimize what San Francisco does on defense if I'm Green Bay. I'm trying to put together a short passing game. I want the ball out of Aaron Rodgers' hands in 2.5 seconds each play. That same thing we just talked about with Bill Walsh, I'll take these 4 or 5 yard plays. I just have to move them all the way down the field and get that defensive front frustrated because every time they get to me, I'm letting the ball go. Every 2.5 seconds, I'm letting the ball go 2 seconds. I'm letting the ball go 2 seconds. I'm letting the ball go. So now you get tired rushing and you get frustrated that you're not getting to the hit. Now, the only problem is I see Tom Brady playing like that, but Aaron Rodgers likes to hold on to the ball too long sometimes trying to make the play up the field. And he's not patient enough to just matriculate the ball down the field. That's why I make it's a difficult thing for Green Bay to turn and do the thing they need to do to beat San Francisco. Because to beat San Francisco, you got to go and take 4 yards here, 3 yards there, 4 yards here, and go all the way down the field and wear out that front. You'll wear out everybody. I just don't see Nick Bosa wearing down. That boy, he has a motor, man. He had it in high school when I watched him at St. Thomas, my old high school, and I see it now. He just has a motor that keeps going. But you'll wear everybody else out. And then after you wear everybody else out, you're going to roll away from Bosa.
The Hall of Famer, Michael Irvin here on 95.7 The Game. It sounds like you think the Niners are going to the Super Bowl.
Oh, well, and I told you that weeks ago. And I was just watching the last game. I was studying some and watching the last game. You said that was a dominating performance last time. Now, I don't think it'll be that easy this time. You know, it was 23-0 going to half. It was a dominating performance last time. I just don't think it'll be that way. But I do believe that San Francisco will win this football game. And I will see you guys in Miami.
Was this their easiest path as you look back at it, or would it have made any difference?
And that's the thing I said. And when everybody – remember when San Fran was going through those 3 8-win teams, they it was the gauntlet. Everybody said they wouldn't come through it. And then when they came through it, everybody said, I don't know, because the defense – what was wrong with the defense? The defense is falling off. I said, no. This is what will solidify them and get them to the Super Bowl because they went through these hard teams. Baltimore was over there playing the Cincinnati's of the world, you know, so getting false readings on how good they are. They were over there playing teams they would never see again while San Fran was beating teams that they were going to see again, and that was going to be the parameter for what made the difference. And I think that's what made the difference. Okay, now you at number one seed, you came in and Tennessee came up here and you were not prepared for Tennessee. But what San Fran went through, no matter who comes in there, and I'm honestly believing no matter which route they would have had to take to get there, that they would be right where they are right now because of that season and that gauntlet of season that they had during the season, that gauntlet I call it. During the season.
After watching Robert Saleh's unit just mow down Kevin Stefanski, did you think that the Browns were going to hire the Stefanski and not Robert Saleh?
Well, that would have been, you know, the thing to do off of earning. If you said who earned the job, that would have been the correct thing to do. But it's not off who earned the job. It's also off of what do you have on the job when you get to the job. And what you have on the job when you get to the job is a young quarterback that you're trying to win over. And think about it. If you go and bring in the defensive head coach and you bring in a great offensive coordinator and he connects with the young quarterback and then they take off as a unit, the offensive unit takes off, or even the team takes off, now somebody's coming to give that offensive coordinator a head coaching job, and you're going to be stuck back starting all back over again with an offensive unit with your young quarterback. So I understand why Cleveland went the route that they went, because they wanted somebody that can connect with Baker Mayfield and be with him for a while with the top position already in the NFL, so somebody couldn't come and steal him away. There's no doubt Salas earned it, but for what was on the job that he had already earned, they had to go offensive coach, I think.
That said, if the reports are true that the Browns want their head coach to turn in the coach's game plan to the owner and the analytics department on Friday and then have another meeting with the analytics department on Saturday, who won this, Stefanski or Saleh? Because I think it might have been Saleh.
I totally understand what you're saying from the standpoint of what hornet's nest are we walking into. You know, what if the turning it over to the owner and all of these guys, if they knew how to do it, they wouldn't need me to do it. Go do it yourself. Like, you're going to check all of my work as if you have dominion over my work because you have knowledge over the game plan that I'm putting in or what I'm trying to accomplish with this team, or you have any knowledge of the team. Then go do it yourself. They can't do it themselves. Now, they just want to check on everything, I guess. I don't know why they would want to check on anything. I'm sure some of the stuff that he'll put in front of them, they won't even understand to the degree that it will really make a difference. I really believe that. But this is the route that they're trying to go, and it's Cleveland. Cleveland. That's all you can say.
Michael Irvin here on 95.7 The Game. So what do you think? Jimmy Johnson is about a 42 regular in the jacket. He's going to need one. What did it mean to you to watch your former head coach get his entrance into the Hall of Fame?
D-Man, listen, and you know, Jimmy and his past and what he's done in the football, you know, I was so proud of it and so happy. And Jimmy came to Miami the same year I got there, you know. So when I tweeted, that's why I said my coach, and I know what he meant to me. I know what he's been to me through all of this whole process, and to see him get his rightful due. After honestly, and I love Jerry Jones also, but after honestly seeing him get slighted on his due in the Ring of Honor here with Dallas, because of the beef he has with Jerry, you know, I felt bad about that, but to see him get this was incredible. You saw how emotional he was. I've known Jimmy for most of my life. I'm 53 years old. I've known him for way over half of my life, since I was 17, 18 years old. And I've never, in all of my life, I've never, ever seen him like he was when David Baker was giving him the information and letting him put him on notice that he is now Hall of Fame. I've never seen him get that emotional, man. And it was touching. It was very touching. I was in my hotel room watching the games, and I caught myself crying. I was happy I was alone when I looked up. Like, I'm glad I'm by myself, you know, to see this. But then I did tweet it about it.
We couldn't tell either of your stories without the other guy. So who really put the other guy into the Hall of Fame? Did you put him in, or did he put you in?
I always tell Jimmy, listen, man, even in the patent business, they always go about who was out there first. I got to Miami, Jimmy came to Miami. I got to Dallas, then Jimmy came to Dallas. I told him, he owes me. Now, I will say this about Coach, and I appreciate it. He did tell me, even then, because I graduated after my junior year and then went to the NFL. I was coming to the NFL. Back then, you had to graduate to go early. So as I graduated, I had control over the draft. Green Bay teams wanted to draft me. I said, no, I'm not going to Green Bay. So if they drafted me, they would lose a draft choice, and I could apply for a supplemental draft because I could drop a class and go back to school. Jimmy said to me, he said, hey, I know this stuff you're playing with the NFL. I won't get in the way of it. But he said, if Dallas calls, you're going to Dallas. He told me then, he said, I got an oil friend who's probably going to buy the Cowboys soon, and I may be joining you. Dallas is the only team that did not call and get permission to draft me, they just drafted me, and I couldn't do anything about it because Jimmy had already warned me what was coming.
So what you're suggesting here is that Jimmy Johnson stalked you.
Yes, he did. Ray, you say he rode me to success like a fresh backpack on a school kid. That's what he did. He just rode me, man. But that's all right. I love him to death, man. Without him, honestly, I had just lost my father when I got to Miami. The first day I got to Miami, I got in a fight with an offensive lineman. Then I got in another fight because I was telling these cats, like everybody, they were trying to do all the freshman haze. And I said, I ain't got time for this. I got brothers and sisters that are broke and hungry back home. I didn't come for this. I came to try to help my family make a living. So I was getting in fights with everybody. And Jimmy was calling me to his office. And he looked at me because he said, Michael, he said, son, what is wrong with you, son? We're trying to give you an opportunity. You can't be fighting everybody on the team. We're going to fight everybody on the other side in other uniforms. And he said, son, you can just really, I'm not going anywhere. I'll be here for you. I'm not going to give up on you. I will always be here for you. And I can't tell you how much I appreciated that. Then I got ready to leave, and he said, hey, son, one more thing, son. He said, did you ever think about boxing? I mean, you really like to fight. You ever think about boxing?
Michael.
I was like, coach, football's my game.
You are a treasure, man. Thank you so much, as always.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.